Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 21st, 2021. A court in Sudan sentences some South Sudanese refugees to jail for taking part in intercommunal violence.
Sudanese authorities have convicted those who were arrested before. They are many, including those who were caught with pangas and machetes.
And some community leaders in Central Equatorial State reject the appointment of a new lawmaker.
I don't know this lady, where she came from and her origin, I don't know. Being as a chairperson of Calico community, I don't know.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A court in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, has sentenced 600 South Sudanese refugees to 6 months in prison after they were found guilty of engaging in intercommunal fighting, which led to the deaths of 7 people during the Eid al-Fitr holiday last week. A human rights activist in Khartoum says each convicted person must pay a fine of 20,000 Sudanese pounds. For VOA News, Viola Elias has the story from Juba.
Eyewitnesses says the trouble started during the Eid al-Fitr holiday when two South Sudanese refugees community clashed over a marriage-related issue. They say a family in one community became outraged when they discovered their daughter eloped with a man from another community. They say the dispute led to the deaths of 7 people and left 22 others wounded in the Soba and Hajusif residential area of the capital, Khartoum. Akol Malong, a South Sudanese human rights activist in Khartoum, says Sudanese authorities have since arrested hundreds of people suspected of participating in the intercommunal violence. Malong says judges in 3 separate courts tried and sentenced 600 suspects on Wednesday.
Sudanese authorities have convicted those who were arrested before. They are many, including those who were caught with pangas and machetes. The total number of those convicted in the 3 regions of Omdurman, Khartoum and Bahri is 600, and each of the region has separately sentenced each person to 6 months in jail, a 20,000 Sudanese pound fine.
Malong says all the convicts are men. She says court has also ordered the convicts to return to South Sudan after serving their sentence. A staffer in the office of UN humanitarian agents in Khartoum answered the phone today but said the office staff does not work on Friday. He later said he needed to consult with his team and would get back to South Sudan in Focus with a comment. So far, that has not happened. Malong says 180 other South Sudanese suspected of instigating the violence are still in police custody and expected to appear in court on Saturday or Sunday. She says South Sudanese community representatives and Sudanese authorities met and agreed that police conduct regular patrols in the 2 residential areas to prevent further violence.
We sat and decided that the police continue patrolling all the residential areas because those youths are still moving with pangas and knives. They are waiting to fight again. But I told them yesterday that police is going to stay here because I believe that the day police wouldn't be around, we shall hear of many criminal activities.
Malong says since Wednesday, most of South Sudanese refugees in Khartoum have stayed in their homes afraid that they will be arrested by Sudanese police. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
A South Sudanese journalist has filed a case against the country's former petroleum minister Ezekiel Lul Gatkuoth. Kong Pal Chang says Gatkuoth took his children for DNA testing without his permission, adding that the former minister was planning to send 2 of his children to their mother in Australia. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino has more from Juba.
Journalist Kong Pal Chang, who works for a media outlet in Juba, says in late 2010, when Gatkwoth was the head of mission of the then Southern Sudan government in the US, Gatkwoth helped his wife Nyapal Lul Yual and other South Sudanese artists obtain US visas in order to mobilize South Sudanese in the US to vote for separation during the referendum. Chang says when his wife returned to South Sudan pregnant in 2013, he kicked her out of their marital home. After his wife gave birth, Chang says he later reconciled with her. After a few months, the journalist says his wife decided to travel to Australia, claiming her life was in danger in South Sudan. In November 2020, Chang asserts that Gatkwoth illegally took his children for DNA tests without his permission.
He just took a flight to Nairobi and went home through the help of my in-laws. This in-law of mine took the kid to Ezekiel Lol, where Ezekiel went and took them to a private clinic where if they were tested, their blood was taken for DNA. And I was not aware of this. I came to learn later when my wife, who is in Australia now, sent the DNA test. She told me those kids are not yours, they are for Ezekiel Lol. I told her, those are my kids. If there's any child who is not mine, anyone who is claiming, that person need to go to court, not behind me. That is child trafficking.
Chang says he has opened a civil case against the former minister because he believes Gatkwoth committed adultery with his wife and now is trying to take the 7- and 9-year-old children and move them to Australia.
He can take them to the embassy and say, these are my kids. The DNA has shown these are my kids, possibly. And maybe the U.S. will say, okay, these are your kids. We are taking them to the... I don't know, but this is against the law. This is against child right. This guy even deserves to be behind bar now as we speak.
Chang says he saw the DNA results showing some percentages of resemblance between the two children and Gatkwoth. He says whether Gatkwoth is the biological father of the children or not, he believes Gatkwoth has no parental rights because the children were born out of an act of adultery. Chang says Gatkwoth has been trying to resolve the case out of court.
I say there's nothing that should be solved outside the court. This is a crime that he has committed. If law said it favor him, let law favor him, and I will know it's a decision. It's a decision by the court. If law said this is a crime he has committed, let the law take its course. Resolving it outside the court does not help.
Nyapal Lul Yual, the mother of the two minors, denies getting involved in smuggling her children away from Chang.
What he's saying is not true. No communication like that between me and Ezekiel goes. I'm in my house. So I'm not Ezekiel's wife. So all this are not true. I just want what is going on between us is divorce, as I told you. But he's trying to do dodgy things. I think that's why I need to you guys.
Yual says she cannot take the children from Chang because they are living in Kenya under Chang's custody. She says their divorce case is still in South Sudan court. Asked whether Gatkwoth is the biological father of her two children, Yual declined to answer and handed the phone to someone who identified himself as Abraham Garang, who said he is Yual's husband.
Two children belong to Gatkwoth Lul. To Ezekiel Gatkwoth, the former minister of petroleum. Biologically, he did DNA, he did everything, and he was not with a woman by then.
When South Sudan in Focus asked Gatkwoth, who is now in the U.S., to comment on the situation, he would only say that Chang's accusation is, quote, fake news, end quote. South Sudan in Focus obtained a summon issued by the Melekea police station in Epo, ordering Gatkwoth to appear before the Central Division to answer questions about an investigation. South Sudan in Focus contacted Captain Richard Michael, the lead investigator in the case, who declined to comment, saying he is not allowed to speak to the media. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serena in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Yei, where some community leaders in Lujuli Payam of Central Equatoria State's Morobo County are accusing leaders of the other political parties, a partner in the Government of National Unity, of appointing what they call a non-community member identified as Afikuru Anemu Risasi as a lawmaker representing the Payam in the parliament. For VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Yei.
Since President Salva Kiir issued a decree appointing lawmakers to the National Legislative Assembly about 2 weeks ago, several social media users have questioned the appointment of MP Afekuru Anemu Risasi, with some alleging she is a Ugandan national. Community leaders say appointing a lawmaker without consulting the community violates their constitutional rights as South Sudanese. Lojule Payam community leader Elnai Baba says the umbrella group other political parties has no presence on the ground in Morobo County, and he and other community leaders do not believe Risasi originates from the area.
I don't know this lady. Where she came from and her origin, I don't know. Being as a chairperson of Kaliko community, I don't know. What I want to say to them is that any person to be appointed in national level, the consultation to be reached on the ground so that we can verify.
Lojule Payam community leader Simon Agele says people in his Payam know nothing about the woman appointed to represent them at the National Legislative Assembly.
We don't know us, it's not from us. Based on all the recharges we did from all the Kaliko clans of the two Payams of Lugulo and the Buda, we don't have someone of that kind. He is not from us.
Both Baba and Agele are calling on the OPP leadership to appoint a lawmaker who can represent the interests and the views of the local community. Albino Akol, spokesman for the other political parties, asserts that Peter Mayen, the leader of the People's Liberal Party, nominated Risasi.
The rest of our leaders does not know who nominated that lady. Don't know. And it is good that the community came out clearly that this lady does not belong to them and she's a foreigner. And we have a lot of information about her, and how did you went there is not our responsibility. So coming of that late, not the responsibility of hope, only responsibility of one person, who is Honorable Peter Mayen.
Mayen, who also serves as Humanitarian Affairs Minister, says Risasi's appointment has been suspended after his office received several complaints regarding the matter.
A nomination came from the grassroots, from the women on that particular state. Neither did the top leadership of OPP knew there was a problem or there was an issue. When we received the nominations, we just endorsed the nomination as it is. Eventually, they have been there, complaints, communities and people face as an issue with her. So the party leadership have finally resolved that her nomination is put on hold or suspended until proof otherwise.
Boboya James, a policy analyst with the Institute for Policy and Research, says the Directorate of Nationality and Immigration should follow the law on awarding citizenship for people who are not from South Sudan.
The policy implication is that she'll only be sitting in parliament, she'll not be representing the vulnerable people, because she'll never go back to Morobo to do consultation, she'll never go back to talk to the vulnerable people, she'll not even visit the vulnerable people, because the vulnerable people will not accept her to come in there. And then she cannot even speak issues of Morobo in the national parliament. I would want to really say that whatever is going on, it's wrong. It's against the constitution. It's against the peace agreement itself.
South Sudan in Focus tried calling Risasi several times for comment. She responded with a text message saying, "I am sorry, I am still in class and I cannot be able to take calls right now." End quote. South Sudan in Focus also contacted her through the messaging service WhatsApp, but Risasi did not respond. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin, in Yei.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, officials in Jonglei State screen private health centers. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there something about yourself that you would like to change?
Definitely not. No, because at least I know my life has been good. I've not been entertaining bad company. So to change my life, I need to start making at least new friends again.
Life is all about learning. We learn every day. So in as much as we are still breathing, there are things we need to shed off.
Currently, I would like to change my tummy. I'm growing a pot belly. So I'm exercising. I've bought an abdomen machine that's helping me to deal with it. And I want to lose weight, probably 5-8 kilos.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Jonglei State health officials have ordered the screening of all private health facilities in the state capital, Bor. Officials say medical facilities must present operating licenses and employee qualification for verification by May 24th or they will be shut down. The Jonglei State health minister says the exercise will help authorities evaluate the capacity of private health facilities to provide services in the state. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Bor.
Jonglei State Health Minister Atong Kwal Manyang says the decision to screen all clinics, pharmacies and drug stores was taken following numerous reports of patients dying while being treated at private health facilities due to unprofessionalism on behalf of medical workers. Manyang says regulating private health facilities will help build public trust in the state health sector, warning that any facility which will not meet the requirements will be shut down on Monday.
You must fulfill these conditions. Number one, you must have the license for opening in the first place before you even open. You need that license. It's a must. Number two, even the ministry will have to look at the people who are going to work there. Are they qualified? For example, if you have, a clinic, is there a clinical officer? Is there a doctor? Is there a nurse? These are very vital. In a pharmacy, what knowledge does that person have to even work there? So that is a requirement. And even later on, we have to also know where you are opening it and how the condition of that structure is. So these are some of the things that have to be looked into. So definitely, if anybody is opening, or if anybody had already opened, then these are some of the things that they must adhere to.
Manyang says all unlicensed private clinics, pharmacies and drug stores in Bor town will be shut down. The state health minister says she decided to shut down illegal health facilities after a survey carried out by her ministry last month found that more than half of the private clinics operating in Bor town are illegal.
There has been a lot of cases. Individual people talking about the kind of services that they are getting out there. And even in worst cases, a case of a child who died as a result of negligence. Some people are given wrong medication. Some people in some cases you get treated and you don't feel well. You don't recover from your illness or whatever you're suffering from. So we've been getting reports and we feel that this is our responsibility.
Manyang says out of 109 facilities that were assessed in the survey, only 53 presented operational licenses. The other 53 did not have licenses. Three facilities had expired document. Manyang says the same survey revealed that some employees of pharmacies and drug stores were not qualified. She says some workers were either underage or did not have proper medical training. Dr. Ajang Garangakech, director of True Care Medical Center in Bor, applauds the move to regulate the state's private health sector, saying it will help save lives.
The order is a good order. What is needed is to be implemented fully. Yes, people have different interests. There are those who are joining the healthcare system purposely to get money. Okay? There are those who join the healthcare system to deliver right services to the communities and to improve the living standard of people. So, consequences are many. If wrong people are in the private sector, in the healthcare system, instead of them being life savers, they will be killers. They will be the one to drain the population with their money and at long run, kill them. There are many ways they can kill people. If you give a wrong medication or a contraindicated drug to a pregnant lady, abortion will take place. That is already killing. And it is because of insufficient knowledge. So all this can be regulated by allowing the right people to work in the clinic. So with this order, people who join the healthcare system purposely to benefit and they don't have the right knowledge.
Bor resident Simon Denga Yuen also welcomes the decision to screen private health workers and clinics.
If there's that decision, then that decision is very good because clinics or the pharmacies are becoming like any other shops. Anyone can just go there and open a chemist and sell them when they don't know even how to handle those medicines and is not even having papers.
The UN says all health facilities should be regulated by the government because they serve the local population. In March last year, a court in Bor sentenced two health workers to 3 years in prison after both were found guilty of medical negligence in connection with the death of a 15-year-old girl at a clinic in Bor. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
We love to hear your comments on some of the issues covered on this program. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments.
Thanks, John. We heard from many of our listeners once again this week, with several of you weighing in on the troubling situation in the Abyei administrative area. Mengistu Zama Bidi from Yambi of Western Equatoria State says, "The killing in the disputed Abyei administrative area will continue to occur due to the slow process by both governments in Juba and Khartoum, as well as the UN and other bodies responsible for the case of the disputed Abyei area. Conflict over Abyei is causing serious difficulty in relations between the governments of Sudan and South Sudan. I therefore call for quick decisions on the issue of Abyei so that the natives of Abyei can be a free people just like any other people in the world." Jacob Dior Machweng from Euro Lake State writes, "It's shocking that there's no day that goes by without hearing deadly attacks from all over the country. The attacks in the Abyei administrative area in Maridi County were barbaric, and the killing of a Cordate aid worker in Budi County of Eastern Equatoria State must be condemned and the culprits brought to book so aid workers continue to deliver services without fear." Mabor Alat Rengo from Rumbek writes, "In solidarity with our people from Abyei, I condemn in the strongest possible terms the tragic attack by assailants who were alleged to be Arab nomads from Sudan. This is not the first time such acts were done to us by brothers from Sudan. Therefore, it requires serious attention from both foreign affairs ministers to work cooperatively in order to put off these criminal acts and restore a good bilateral relation." Joel Amor-Red in Haisora, Jonglei State Capital Board writes, "For us as South Sudanese to have a lasting peace in our beloved country, we need to have well-functioning government institutions, equitable distribution of resources, free flow of information, a low level of corruption, acceptance of rights of others, a high level of human capital, good relations with our neighbors, and a sound business environment. War is enough. Let's give peace a chance." Maker Mayor from Lakes States Yorol Adior Payam says, "Many South Sudanese are now confused why fighting occurred against the Khartoum government back then, because there is no equality, justice, prosperity or proper constitution that makes people feel like celebrating, which may be due to SPLM loss objectives. I now feel like our heroines and heroes died for no good reason. Long live our fallen heroines and heroes. Long live South Sudan." Musema Stephen Julius Ilia in Yumbe, Uganda writes, "The issues which are occurring of targeting major roads in Junub Sudan are not portraying a good image. That's being arrogant and inhuman." Jonah Satir from Kenya says, "Africa is now in trouble again. Imagine France offering to help Sudan in paying off its IMF loan. Sudan is being taken over by France indirectly. It is better for African countries to risk inflation by producing excess money than over-relying on first world countries." Pok Chuni Yok Kwai from Juba says, "It is sad to hear news that our people staying in protection of civilian sites for 7 years are killing themselves instead of waiting for the graduation of unified forces so that they go home and start their normal activities. I'm calling for government police to release those who were arrested and hand them over to the UN police." Samuel Remo in Yei says, "I am very pleased with the South Sudan government for vaccinating its own people against yellow fever. This is the best expenditure ordinary citizens expect from the government as their rightful benefit." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3, Bortown writes, political wranglings in Jongule State between the so-called politicians and SPLM cadres need amicable dialogue to allow implementation of the peace agreement, because the state has many challenges like the devastating floods and insecurity which need to be urgently addressed. Saber Isaac Khamis from Yambio, South Sudan says, the random road ambushes along roads connecting the capital to other areas is very alarming, threatening the current revitalized peace agreement. Let the current government try to reach compromises with the holdout rebel groups, otherwise it will take us back to square one. My sincere condolences to the families of victims who have lost their loved ones in the accident of Yei Juba Road and Juba Meridi Road. James Dor Chinkeu Ayel in Juba says, the celebration of May 16th did not meet the expectations of visionary leader Dr. John Garang Dimabior and the heroes and heroines who sacrificed their lives for free and fair democracy, good governance, the rule of law, justice for all, transparency, and full service delivery to the population, which current leaders took for granted. May 16th would have been celebrated with the achievement of good roads, standard hospitals, standard schools, electricity, and clean drinking water that are nowhere to be seen since 2005. Emma in Juba says, bringing more guns to South Sudan is like adding fuel to a burning fire, because currently even the government does not have real statistics of firearms in the country. Maj Riag Garang in Arua, Uganda writes, the arrest of 12 people said to be connected to the recent Kalos Road ambushes, abductions and looting on major highways in central Equatoria comes as a relief to the people of South Sudan, as we are now seeing our government coming on track to know their full responsibilities to protect their people and ensure that peace, accountability and justice prevail in South Sudan. I commend the government. We need to continue hearing such positive steps. And finally, Mal Adao Mal in Bortown says, the court ruling on the Shirkat incident of June 3, 2020 is unbecoming and unjust. Where on earth is the suspect sentenced to death and the perpetrator is left free? I doubt whether this country has a constitution, and if it happens that South Sudan is having amended the constitution, then the very people who wrote it are the ones violating it. We fought Khartoum because of being second-class citizens. Surprisingly, that class doesn't even exist. The citizens are being subjected to suffering by their own leaders. The views expressed here do not represent the views of VOA or this program. We appreciate your comments. Keep them coming. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Thanks, Nabil. Keep your comments short and to the point. That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Tutu Party by Emerson.
They watch like a bottom step and die. I see short cut, hey, a mini scat. Who's one for dance with when his party goes that? I want Saleh, yeah. I want ballet.
What you want?
Makale, and the party back me alle.
Overload,
no to your business, but in a party you come. Left me make a overload if we at you gonna do. Oh, oh, yeah, yeah.
Come to party. Till we go shake to today. All my feel like
We've been listening to Emerson with the song Tutu Party. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
My force lock up tea, Baba do me waiting to say. Tell me if you really don't ready. Yeah, yeah, see yeah, the yeah. Dance, they swing and they bounce it. No one say, I never took to party.